everybody. It is 1:05 p.m. Post Meridian Eastern Standard Time. You're listening to 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky, up here on 6th Street. My name is Chuck, and I'll be with you until 2 p.m., bringing you some jams and some discussion with a special guest that we have in the studio. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey guys, it's Ellie Herring, and I'm happy to be here today with Chuck.
What is up, Ellie?
What's up?
So that first track we heard was Don't Fall. One of your tracks. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that one came out a few years ago, actually, which is weird to even say. It feels like last year, and I think it's probably been at least 3 years since that record came out, and I've had a few releases since, but it's interesting to hear that again because it's not one I listen to much. Honestly, I don't listen to my own stuff very much anyway, unless I'm DJing it out, but that particular track I haven't listened to in a while. But in listening to that one more than any probably others that I could look back on in the last 5 years is a reflection of where I've gone from there to where I am now. It's kind of led that makes the most sense. If I were to look back now, I would select that track and be like, okay, that's where I was going. I just didn't know that I would continue on the path from Don't Fall. So
that's great.
Yeah, you pulled the right track.
Hey, you know, we do what we can, Ellie. So for folks that aren't familiar with your music, you know, Ellie Herring is an electronic producer, composer, DJ, beat maker. I mean, what else? Programmer.
Yeah. I sit in front of a computer a lot. Yeah. Professional. Let's see, what else have I been doing? A lot of remixes, actually, more than probably original productions lately. Want to get more into scoring is kind of where I think I'm heading. Maybe like a publishing route, so a lot more instrumentals, and creating songs for specific narratives, I think, is what I'm really kind of getting into lately. Even doing that on my own, kind of taking something that I've seen or a scene from a movie I've watched or maybe half a movie and playing that and kind of rescoring over the top of what's going on and creating a new feel or kind of narrative from that, like hitting the mute button and just, you know, going over top of that.
Like filling in the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
The RL puzzle.
Yeah. It's been really fun, and maybe something will come up. Maybe it won't at all, but
yeah.
Might have to even go like under an entirely new moniker because I don't know how to make that fit into what I'm doing now. But
it DJ is, Extremos.
Yeah, yeah. It is a kind of peaceful practice to go through and kind of exploratory. So it's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So Ellie, so I want to ask you first of all, where are you from originally?
Winchester, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Very southeastern Tennessee. Just above Alabama. I was born there and lived there for a few years, but also lived in Georgia for a while, and then moved to Kentucky when I was in high school. So I am from here, but wasn't raised in the state. So kind of all over the Southeast, really. Mm. Alabama some as well. And then I've been in Lexington for 10 years now, so Lexington definitely feels like home after 10 years.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So Ellie, what kind of music were you into growing up? Like, who turned you on to good music?
Oh, I would probably say a lot of that I discovered on my own, and I feel like it had a lot to do with locations that I was living in and what I had available to me. Either on the radio or TV. I remember when I lived in Tennessee, the cable company there or whatever didn't even pick up MTV or VH1. Wow. So for a long time, I didn't even see that. It would be what my parents were playing on the radio, which was a lot of 60s rock and a lot of oldies, even earlier than the 60s. Have a specific memory of listening, however, to NXS. And being like kind of instantly drawn to that electric take on that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember ever hearing even an electronic track until I was in high school, which seems insane to me that it took that long, but it was, you know, some kid brought a CD in. I think it was Robert Miles.
Mm-hmm.
and an Underworld CD. Wow. And that was my first introduction, and my mind was completely blown by that. It was the first time I had heard that outside of a movie, or going and buying like a soundtrack and it having like a random like Chemical Brothers song on it, you know.
Yeah, I'd heard our Ministry track or
yeah I'd only heard what was available in movies that I'd just randomly watched. I'd never had like an electronic album given to me and been able to listen to that from start to finish. I don't know, I think I went through typical phases. My first CD was REM's Automatic for the People.
Classic.
Yeah, and I remember like begging my mom to take me to the record store to get that, and her being cool enough to go buy me a single titled Losing My Religion. And I was, you know, when I look back at that, I'm like, okay.
Thanks, Mom.
So I think that my family made everything available to me that I knew that was there, short of just outside of their own interests, you know. But I listened to everything and played piano as a kid. Strangely, the piano teacher I had as a kid, though, we only played like church hymns. Mm-hmm. And like holiday songs, so I can kill it on some church hymns and holiday songs. Oh, and classics. I mean,
I'm waiting for that Come All Ye Faithful remix, Ellie Herring remix.
Oh, I've got it. So it's all over the place, really. But I would say early influences for stuff I'm making would be from movies, like we were talking about Chemical Brothers, Ministry, even like Basement Jacks. I'm trying to think, Moby.
Orbital. I think about the Orbital score for, what was that movie? The Professional?
Yes. Yeah. Moby was definitely a big one, too. I kind of went backwards with Moby, though, because it's like I got introduced to Moby with Play, but then went back and got really into the stuff he was doing that was just early on, like just guitars, you know, it wasn't where he headed at all. So that was out there. Underworld, of course.
Is anyone in your family musically inclined, or do they play any instruments?
Yeah, on my dad's side, there's music teachers, and everybody played an instrument. My dad was in a band in the 70s, and my uncle is like a master trombone player. Wow. And music teacher. So
cool.
Yeah, it's all on one side, really. So yeah, it comes through. I grew up around it, but not anything. I mean, didn't have like an uncle that was producing electronic tracks, you know, in Southern Tennessee. So. Yeah, not to say it's not happening now, but
no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you said you played piano growing up. Did you pick up any other instruments as you went along?
Later, guitar, but I've tried to pick up guitar several times, but I don't stick with it. I don't know if it's just because I grew up with piano around me all the time and not guitar. It's also just completely, because I don't play by ear, so it's a completely different way of looking at an instrument. Like piano, it was very left to right for me. It makes sense. The guitar board, I it's got to be more by ear for me. Like, for some reason, my brain just will not wrap around the notation of a guitar. So I've tried a few times, but also for the music I'm making now, a guitar doesn't really benefit me in any way, whereas like a MIDI keyboard or whatever, is definitely, I can play any sound more in the world with that, you know. Yeah, not a lot of MIDI guitar work going on.
Yeah, right. Maybe not in the last like 10 years.
No.
But I know some cell phones that were blowing up with some sick MIDI guitar work.
Oh, for sure.
So Ellie, so you graduated high school. What high school did you go to here in Lexington?
It was in Bowling Green. Greenwood. Yeah. Okay. And then went to Morehead State University, which kind of brought me to this side of Kentucky in the first place. I played soccer there, so I went to check it out on a recruiting trip. And when I was younger, I just assumed ignorantly that all of Kentucky looked like Western Kentucky, which, you know, really flat.
Yeah, kind prairie
of,
land.
Yeah. So we start driving east, and I was blown away the closer we got to Morehead, with like hills and all of this, you know. Yeah, you get closer and closer to, well, southeastern and northeastern Kentucky. So I ended up going to Morehead for, 4 years for a BA, and left for a while, and then went back and got my master's.
Cool. What did you get your BA and master's in?
Both in studio art with emphasis in design.
Cool.
So it's kind of how I ended up in coding. now, so kind of stuck with it. Masters definitely played more of a part in that than undergrad. Mm-hmm. And I went to Pratt Institute in New York for about a semester and two, and then left.
Yeah, how was living up in New York?
I loved it, but yeah. It was very tough going to school, and it was an MFA track, so super demanding, and being able to work to earn very little money is really impossible. Yeah, I was living in Brooklyn, like three blocks from school, which was Clinton Hill. Recently went back there, and I was like, man, I thought I had it hard then. It's completely changed now, mm-hmm. even more expensive. I just couldn't imagine. So I kind of got freaked out by the amount of money I was paying for school on top of just constant losses of money just in life and trying to survive up there. Mm-hmm. It was just, I was tired. It's the best way to say it. And I think at that point I was actually in an abstract painting MFA program. And I fought with myself a lot for going to school at that point. No one is there to teach you technique. It's more of influencing a style or, a direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I learned a lot even in the time I was there, but I got a little spooked by how much I was paying and came back down to Kentucky. But ironically, I now work for a company in New York City.
I just couldn't.
I was there last week and then working for them all week. It's like I just keep getting reeled back in there. So I don't know if I'm going to end up back. I would love to try again having an actual job and living up there and, totally different set of circumstances. Mm. But I still don't know. It's like every year I get older, I'm like, I don't know if I can slum it up there.
Yeah, like, that's a challenge for sure.
It is. It's definitely motivating, though, and the energy there is, it's super inspiring. If any time I go up there, it's like I come home and just I come back with a million ideas. So mm-hmm. It's like a good refresher, but I don't know what would happen if that were all the time.
Yeah,
so.
I was thinking about my friend Kenny DeForest came here and did a comedy show, and he was telling me that he made this joke at the beginning of the set because he was staying at my house, and he went in my backyard and like laid in the hammock I have in the garden back there, and he's like, yeah, I went outside and I just heard some birds and bugs chirping, and I had a panic attack. <'Cause> it's like, I've been in New York for so long, I forgot how what nature felt like, and that this is the normal human condition. So.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about moving to LA, and I do that a lot, the back of my house here in Lexington, and I think I'm aware of it because I have lived in New York, and I had that moment when I came back to Kentucky one time to visit while I was living there, and we were just sitting out on a patio having drinks in Lexington, and I looked at someone and said, I can't believe how quiet it is, and mm-hmm. I can hear for what feels like so far, on both sides, all around me. You don't get that at all there. And so I have that loss in my mind. And when I'm thinking about moving to LA, sometimes I'm sitting in the back of my house and thinking, okay, remember these sounds because you won't hear them again.
For real.
Like the sound of rain even, or, crickets at night or that kind of thing. That'll go away all over again if you move out west or even to a city that size. So
true. So Ellie, how did you end up in Lexington, I guess, in general?
Oh, just in general. After I graduated from Moorhead, I came here and worked at UK. Actually, it was my first job out of school as doing design work for trying to think. I think Auxiliary Services at UK. I think it's since been renamed, but I worked there for a few years before I went back and got my MA. So work brought me here first. I actually didn't know a lot about Lexington and had spent zero time here, but it was regionally a city I felt like I could move to that wasn't terribly far from where I went to school and that I might be able to find a job. So really, it was on a whim.
Like, you look like a city I could be a best friend with.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try it out. Cool. Then moved, and I just keep coming back here as like home for some reason every time I move. So
I know the feeling.
I talk to people about moving again, which may be in the next 6 months, but in the back of my mind, I still feel that I'll end up here, you know?
Yeah, you're like, where will I go to just be hang out for a while before I move back here?
Yeah, yeah. It's 10 years or will it be 20 years before I'm back here? Because ultimately, I know it'll happen.
It's like, true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a comfortable pair of socks.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's like, I know what's up here, so.
So, Ellie, when did you decide to get serious about your music?
I was actually working on my master's, and we're doing a video kind of understudy class and some digital cut work and that kind of thing. And I grabbed a MIDI keyboard to try to program in just some sounds for stuff, and I didn't realize the capability of connecting. At that time, I was using a program called Reason. Mm-hmm. So I got a copy of Reason, plugged in the MIDI keyboard, and I had absolutely no idea that it was that robust, that it could create any sounds, and I could alter them and map the knobs on the keyboard to do certain things and create parameters, and it just totally grabbed hold of me. And it started from just creating sounds for things like that, and then moving to, you know, more broad, these sounds come together to make, I don't know, a minute of sounds that work together, and then all of a sudden it's songs, and then it's vocals, and it's just progressed. It's constantly changing. Production is getting better, and it's probably been 10 years now since I've picked up that keyboard and thought, I can even program drums on here. You know, it really expanded. I thought that it would be, to make that style of music, I would have to have a lot of hardware and be in a studio, and I didn't I just didn't know that you could sit, you know, down with that. It was, but really before there were tons of like YouTube tutorials and all this stuff available too, you know. It's like now you can sit down and you're like, oh, I wonder how, I don't know, you make a snare drum sound like this, and you can find how to do that in, you know, 5 minutes. So it was before all of that, and then that kind of, honestly, that helped a lot to have the internet and people posting and blogs and forums on creating in certain types of software. Eventually I switched to Ableton, but I was in Reason for a long time. So that's kind of how it all started, and it's just continued to evolve into, I don't know where it's going, but
and I think in music there's always this discussion, and maybe it's with older folks too, of between like analog and digital.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's a huge thing, and you know, some people might be like, I don't like hip-hop, I don't like DJing, you know, get a guitar or something.
Yeah,
but I just don't think that they realize what's really involved in the complexity of building that, or even what's happening live.
Know,
that people are beat tracking and mixing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I think about that a lot too, because I've picked up a couple of pieces of hardware that have helped a lot kind of get outside of just software capability, and it kind of leads to more randomization, I think, in what's being created. Instead, you know, in software I do things a certain way, or maybe five different ways are the only ways that I know to program MIDI notes or whatever. But you know, with the sequencer I can set it to random, and I could adjust all these things that create sounds that I could have never anticipated, and kind of like happy accidents just start to occur.
For
and
sure,
then it's songs are developing, but
it's like abstract painting, but with a MIDI controller.
Yeah, exactly. But even back to what you were saying, in recording those sounds off of that hardware can even be difficult. And you know, it's like two pieces sometimes. I'm working on stuff from with a drum machine I picked up. It's like, I can't imagine how long this would take if I were like miking a drum set or miking, I don't.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and then mixing those individual sounds later
with tape.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, the computers have improved the expedition of things.
Or that. And I've been getting also into recently I was in Seattle, and I went to a record shop and picked up a bunch of just $1 12-inch kind of breakbeat singles. I came back with like 30 records and just sampled all of that in to get some of those really classic sounds that would take me forever to recreate. And because they're coming in on vinyl, they're so warm to begin with. And I kind of had that thought with tape also, which I did a lot of sampling from tapes, not on What a Joy, but on Chipped, which ended up being a tape release. But the ways to come up with this style of music, I guess, are endless. So when someone's arguing, well, why don't you just play a guitar, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that might actually be simpler than trying to combine yeah. all of this stuff. It's like you do have a point, you know, but yeah, it doesn't fit.
Yeah. When your notation or maybe your tone or your tuning might be the only decisions you're making when it comes to electronic yeah. music, you know, even just crafting a snare sound or a drum pattern. I mean,
yeah, you get super fixated on it.
You've got 1,000 different options to choose.
Yeah. And I go to a lot of like classical guitar shows with my dad because he's really into that. And I'm like envious that someone mastered a single instrument to that degree.
Yeah.
It's like just having that focus to be a master. Mm-hmm. It's something that you're so comfortable with on stage. You make it look easy. Yeah. And I get up there and just be like, ding, ding.
yeah.
Know? Like, here's a chord, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's, I don't know. It's kind of mind blowing to see someone play a 2-hour set on a single instrument and it'd be like one of the most moving things that you see or hear in years.
Truly.
You know, it doesn't take a lot. It's just one instrument.
Yeah.
Did all of it. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm really envious of that, but I also know how it'll work and I could never sit with one thing. It just wouldn't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, wouldn't happen.
Too many options. Well,
yeah.
Just in case people are joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, and we're talking to Lexington electronic music producer Ellie Herring about her music.
Yeah.
So maybe let's talk about some of your releases. So what was your very first release ever, Ellie?
Oh, very first release ever. I think was What to Know was a single, and that came out on CD. I think it was an 8-track, so an LP, but the single was kind of the anchor in that. So it's the first thing. It was put out on Race Car, which was located in Cincinnati at that time, and I've done several releases with them since then, but that was the first. And I look back and I listen to that, and the production style is a lot looser and quiet, and I almost can't listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, but
and like I would like to revisit this.
Yeah, I like just want to instantly write the label head and be like, can you pull this off of every electronic outlet, because I can't like take it off of everything like Apple Music. But I ultimately don't want that. It shows growth, and even in listening to even the chipped release, it's like something allowed me. I just didn't know some of the techniques I know now. I kind of wish I could go back to that and break out of the structure that I'm in now. Because, you know, the production was looser and not everything was quantized. And there was something really interesting about that. And it's got a certain quality to it that if I sit down now, I don't produce that way because I'm trying to correct those things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that's why there's still a little bit of me that's like, okay, leave it. You know,
yeah.
These things are good
it's
to
little,
have.
Little human.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. So there are some elements in those, and Chipped followed that, which I had a really bad battle with insomnia for 6 months at least back in the year that 2014 when I worked on that, and it was a true bedroom produced. I mean, like sitting in bed some nights just writing those tracks and sampling things from cassettes, and and I think that's evident in the sound of that record. And I like that a lot. It was picked up a lot of places, surprisingly, to me, because I just felt like, not that it was thrown together, but I didn't sit down with an intent with that. So it just was kind of a therapeutic thing and a way to not go crazy and stare at the walls all night long or pace around. It's nice to sit down and make something that was peaceful. So I sit down now, you know, after midnight and I'm riding a house track or something, I won't go to sleep. It's like my body just gets so psyched in my brain about production that I'm up for good until like later that same afternoon, you know, next afternoon. But if I can keep in something that I'm producing that's calm and a little on the quieter ambient side, which is in Chipped, if you strip the beats off of Chipped, that's pretty much what you have. Then it's a lot more calming, and I feel like that was just a means to deal with the time I had. Mm. I didn't sit down with an intent to write a record like that. It was just a way to deal with a lot of extra time that made me anxious.
For sure.
Yeah.
Do you feel like now you're working more during the day?
Yeah, definitely. Creatively, though, I'm so much better in the morning. Mm. You know, if I sit down and work by 8, so it's like usually I start slowing down a little bit at like 1 p.m., but I can really get a lot done in that amount of time, and then I slow down, and then I have to like pick it up way, way later in the mm. night. But if I stick with like techno or house, I know that I'm in for, you know, a no sleep night.
For sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I prefer morning for sure to produce just for that, throw the whole schedule off. But of course I work from home and do web coding and that kind of thing. So it's definitely a balance of when to work. And sometimes it's better to work on my actual job work through the night, because eventually I'll tire out, you know, working yeah. on that. Don't get quite as psyched.
yeah. Then
writing CSS.
Music. Yeah.
yeah. I'm so hype.
Yeah. Whoa. This banking site is yeah. off the chain.
totally.
So Ellie, so after Chipped came out, yeah, what happened? You started to have some success.
Yeah. What happened? I started DJing a lot more, for one. And, you know, Chipta is one thing, but that I was describing, and in describing that, you wouldn't take that set of sounds and play it on a dance floor mm-hmm. or, like, in a club.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless everyone is on Ambien.
Yeah. then I would kill it. So I started DJing more, and I think that really played a part in the style of music I was producing. Kind of started out just making edits of stuff that I heard. Like say I took a track from Chipped and stripped it down and, you know, whatever, made an edit for, like kind of a club environment. I was doing that with other people's tracks too. And that kind of led into, why don't I just use the same beat and make my own music over top. And it's just led into remixing stuff that's, more, you know, in a format for DJing for sure. So I feel like just as a result of DJing and that energy of playing like techno and house and I don't know, it's really addictive to feed off of that, like in a club or wherever you're playing. It could be a house party and it's, you know, can be equally as inspiring to, you know, see people dance and be happy and like really let go. And it's like when you're writing, you're playing your own track and people are responding that the way that you feel when you create it, mm-hmm. it's really gratifying. You're like, okay, I've done it, you know? So I feel like I'm sitting down. This kind of goes back to the intent thing. It's like, now I'm sitting down with like an intent. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, write dance tracks,
yeah.
you know, which is good, but it's definitely less freeing. Cause, you know, in my head, I feel like putting so much pressure on myself when I'm sitting there, because it's like, I'm not going to create anything that I won't play out.
Yeah, it's all for the catharsis.
Yeah, it's like, I want to put this in a format where I can play it out, and then, you know, maybe I'll have other projects, kind of like the scoring thing I was talking about, where there's not really a lot of pressure, there's not intent, it's mm-hmm. just sit down and...
what comes to you.
Yeah, yeah. Even What a Joy, like the last EP, I'm like super proud of, but it's still a little tamer, like I don't know, quiet. I don't think I would play a single track off of that.
Mm-hmm. And that, like, came out about 6 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. And well, almost a year really, which is crazy. I don't think I would, it depends on the environment, but I can't see any of those tracks really fitting with the stuff I'd pull mm-hmm. to play out now. I have an EP coming out, I was gonna say September, but it's already September, so it'll probably be October. We're waiting on a couple things to line up before that releases. And it's definitely it's in a house music realm of some sort. So I would play every track off of that out.
Cool. Who's putting that album?
Driftless is yeah. doing that one again, the guys that did What a Joy. So yeah, we're trying to wrap up some video stuff for that and get it all squared away, and then I have a remix, actually two remixes coming out on vinyl records, one the 26th of this month for a band out of the UK called Dreamwife, mm-hmm. and then one for Young Ejecta, which will also be on a 12 inch. I'm not sure, I think that one's probably middle of November. I can't remember that release date or the press date for that. So I'm excited about both of those. But again, they both fall in like a dance realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've just definitely tied myself into that.
Yeah, and you know, I dig it as well.
Yeah,
and, you know, I am.
Yeah,
I also really enjoyed the mix you put together for Vice for Thump.
Yeah, I would say anything that's coming out on the EP would fit in that mix.
In that world.
Yeah, I would definitely could have put these tracks on there, and it would have worked. A lot of that style.
Cool. Well, can we hear some tracks?
Yeah.
What kind of jams do you want to spin for?
Let's see. I'll play one off. The new record, I guess.
Is there a title for it?
It's called The Limits.
The Limits.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, let's see.
All right, well, here's Ellie Herring off her unreleased album, her EP, The Limits. Is there a name for this track?
Oh, EP's Muscle, the track's Limits. The Limits, so.
Cool. Well, here we go, Ellie Herring.
From Third Street Stuff, and you're listening to 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio. We love it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to us.
Hello, everyone.
You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 at WLXU up here on the north side of Lexington, Kentucky, bringing you the heat from 6th Street. My name is Chuck, and with us in the studio is Ellie Herring.
Hello.
We just heard maybe a world debut.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's a track off the upcoming EP, Muscle. It's called The Limits. Mm-hmm. It'll be out next month. It's a 3-track EP.
Oh, is that Muscle as in the bivalve? Or Muscle as in what we're flexing right now in the studio?
We're flexing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, flexing. We're flexing.
Nice. I like that. So Ellie, I wanted to ask you, because I know you had a track on Ryan Hemsworth's Secret Songs compilation.
Yeah.
It was all female producers.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you kind of, you know, I think EDM in a lot of ways gets kind of, it's emerging kind of bro country vibes, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about, do you think that EDM is a male-dominated industry?
Yeah, I think it is. It is for sure. Although I think a lot of just genres that would be kind of cousins to EDM or spinoffs or genres that led to EDM mm-hmm. in some way, just within electronic music across the board, it's male dominated.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of girls that are out there and working hard, and they're the ones getting those bookings, and they're working just as hard. I don't know how you get ahead of it. I just don't know. It's just a treatment of women across the board, I think, is not fair.
Yeah, no.
With bookings, with releases, sure. With just respect. You know, I saw something interesting. Even someone pointed out and even did some kind of statistic to back it up on the number of negative comments when a woman is DJing on Boiler Room in the Boiler Room feed compared to when it's a guy that's mm-hmm. on Boiler Room. And it was kind of mind blowing. It's like, you know, and then there's so many arguments that roll off of that. And, so I see it everywhere. I don't know if that's because I have friends across genres of music and probably less EDM. I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty immersed in my ears to the ground mm-hmm. for that kind of stuff. So
for sure.
It's like people I follow, friends, acquaintances. If something occurs and it's, you know, someone puts it online, I'll see it, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, someone will text me, did you see this? Or did you see that this happened? So I don't know what it's like if you're not, I don't know how things are perceived if you're not in it or linked to it in some way.
For sure.
You know, it's almost like I wish I didn't know. Yeah. It's like I have friends that live actually in Los Angeles, and they know a lot more than I do about what's going on in the EDM world and elsewhere mm-hmm. within music, and they'll just kind of unload, not like really frustrations, but just kind of the gossip or, you know, what's going on. And I'm just like, I wish I didn't know, because mm-hmm. now I feel differently about somebody, but also I need that education. I should be sure. aware so that's going on. Yeah. It's tough though. It's
like
really tough.
Wendell Berry said, celebrate, but know the facts.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really tough. I think there has been some improvement though. You know, then again, I don't live in it, so.
Yeah, well, who are some female producers right now that people should be checking out?
Oh, definitely Dot, who I've known for years now. Anna Sia, of course, has just put out a record. Avalon Emerson, who's on Ghostly. Absolutely love what she's doing right now. Let's see. There's Kittens also is a great DJ. She plays a lot with A-Track sometimes. Mm-hmm. Trying to go through the Black Madonna, of course, is absolutely killing it and a huge just hero, honestly, for me. DJ Shiva, who now goes by Non-Compliant, is also another big one. Mm-hmm. She's out of Ohio in Columbus right now and playing a lot of shows in Germany, so she's definitely killing it within the techno genre. Trying to go across here, really that's like probably what I'm listening to right now. Mm-hmm. Across genres, kind of my faves.
Cool. And I know you're playing a lot of shows and festivals right now, like mm-hmm. I know you played South by Southwest this past run, so yeah, where are some cool shows that you've played or places that have had audiences or crowds that you've really enjoyed playing to?
Let's see. South by Southwest was a good one this past year. I played the Moog Fest. They did a night outdoors. I didn't really know what to expect because it was outdoors and the venue was smaller, but they somehow packed in a ton of people. And I did a live set with some Hardware, which was definitely a change for me, but really fun. So that was a good one. The crowd was great. Suzanne Ciani played the headline to that show with like all modular gear, mm-hmm. which was like a pioneer. So talk about women in music. Yeah, I saw like a god pretty much that night and shared the stage with her, which even that alone, you take the crowd out of that, and that was an amazing experience. Trying to think. I did a show in Portland. It's probably been a month now. That was fun. It was actually a corporate event, but outside of Portland, on a huge farm, and it was really cool. It's a very big corporation, so they kind of threw a mini festival. It was really relaxed. It was just really done well. It was nice to, like, I've been to Portland a few times, but it was cool to get outside and see kind of what was going on. And it's beautiful, you know, as it is, but you go 30 miles outside of it even, and mm-hmm. it's excellent. Yeah. So, and Jamples was with me, so that was cool.
Shout out Jamples, we miss you.
Yeah, so I would say those two this year for totally different reasons, mm-hmm. but you know, one was laid back. It was there was no pressure, but you know, it was just nice to play music and not feel stressed out, you know.
For sure.
With the Emo Fest, I was of course just stressing myself to death. It's so nervous, you know. So,
well, you mentioned that you played with Hardware. So, you know, what are kind of some current tools you're producing with or DJing live with right now?
Production wise, I'm in Ableton, have been for years. I think it would take it a lot to break me out of that, because at this point I've invested a lot of hours into figuring out how to create what I want and use that as a tool. So, producing and recording in that, but I picked up a TR-09 drum machine a few months ago because I want to start writing some true techno tracks, and in listening to kind of heroes of techno for me. It's like, okay, what's working here? Why is this recognizable? Mm. And then I got a TR-09 and started recording in these like ride sounds, snare sounds. It's like, this is it. That's it. You know, in Ableton, I had access to 200 different snare, you know, waves. And then in the drum machine, it's very limited, but that's what I needed. It's like, okay, these are the classic sounds. I need the classics, and then I need to build over them. So even limiting myself in that has been awesome. So recording those in, and then I got a little sequencer that's been a big help, and then an arpeggiator. So it'll take, it'll pick up like any MIDI instrument in the software and then create an ARP around it, and you can adjust parameters in that, which is really cool.
And I know you just recently taught a class to women about how to use Ableton, right? How to DJ?
Yeah, actually I taught it on a few different things. So CDJs, which are tables, and then Nina Lowe taught vinyl, so, you know, traditional turntable 1-2 with a mixer. And then we also taught, Jamples was in town and she taught Traktor. So we kind of gave everybody, an outlet. So, you know, it's, I think when I started, I was on Traktor, probably Ableton first, but in a true kind of DJing format, it was Traktor. Just because it was affordable and I wanted to know if I even enjoyed this before I invested a ton of money.
For sure.
The Nina, you know, just showing different ways. Nina started out on vinyl. So that's all she knows, which I'm really jealous of, because I can't play vinyl. I just don't even have, you know, tables to learn on. I don't have a collection of records that would even, I would have to go buy, I don't know how much to like even do that. So yeah, it was a really, really great experience. And I want to do that again in Lexington after seeing the interest that is here for that. And I don't know, I think it was really gratifying for me to see people realize that they could do it. So, you know, it's like beat matching, bringing, you know, they're playing like these mini sets of like 10 minutes and just so amped about it and like happy. I'm like, yes, see, it is possible. It's not, you know, you go to shows and even I still do this. It's looking at someone and being like, how, you know, like I could never, you get that whole thing, this complex where you're like, I could never, you know, I couldn't do it. So oh no, it was cool. I've got to figure out a way to structure it, because I feel like there's so much interest that it's hard to fit in enough time for everybody with equipment. And then, you know, with DJing, you have to have like monitoring and headphones you have sound issues interfering. So I don't know if that comes down to like individual lessons of some sort or breaking it down into smaller workshops, but I would love to keep doing that. Even regionally, I don't think anybody's doing it.
So. Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, it'd be very cool.
And so, Ellie, when you go to make a track that's your own versus making a remix, you know, what is the difference between approaching those two processes?
A remix is kind of anything goes for me. It's usually taking the pieces of the track that are separated that I'm given and figuring out kind of first off what gets tossed away, what I know I don't want to use or I feel like won't fit in my approach at all, and then whatever's left and is stripped off of what even's already stripped down to begin with to give to me, I'll start to work with. And usually that's deciding, do I want to stick within the same beat per minute as the current track, or do I want to break it out? Because that can require a whole different, you know, kind of order of operations. For the remix, usually I have break it out. For some reason, I'm always given tracks that are slower and I want to take them to like 126, like a dance track. So it's figuring out, okay, now out of that, what can make that jump? And like, you know, what can I warp to fit here? And then when I sit down an original track, I used to approach it with a beat first, and lately I've been going in and kind of just setting a really low level metronome, acting as, I don't know, I used to just put a kick, so now that's acting as a kick, I suppose, and just writing melodies and then bass lines and then going in later and putting in the beat, which I think has helped a lot. I used to struggle to write bass lines a lot. So I'd substitute a lot of kick sounds and transposed kicks to make up for that. And now, you know, more of a focus on getting a solid bass line has really kept the songs I won't say basic, but open. They're not full of all of these layers that I felt like I had to fill because I didn't have a baseline written that was could hold it its own.
And especially for techno basses.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Yeah, it is. So that's been a whole other approach. And some of the hardware I have is helping with that too. So like an arpeggiator, you can slow it down and cancel some steps out and it's gonna start creating bass lines for you. So it's helping. Technique is changing per genre, I think.
I believe it, yeah. Per project.
Yeah, per project, so.
Yeah, well, cool. Well, Ellie, so can you let people know if you know, they've never heard your music, where they can check it out?
Yeah, the best place would be to go to, if you use Spotify, you can just search Ellie Herring, anything like that. Apple Music would have it too. Beatport, I don't know if anybody uses that. But also, if you don't use any of those streaming services, you can go to SoundCloud and just search Ellie Herring and all that will come up. I also have a Bandcamp page if you use that. So it's on a lot of outlets.
Cool.
Yeah.
And excellent.
Yeah.
And so do you want to play another track for
sure,
us?
Sure, yeah. I will play a remix that is came out about 3 weeks ago for Australian artist CLN on Nest HQ. It's called Breathe and ended up really being super proud of this one, so I'll play it.
Cool. Well, Ellie, thanks again so much for coming on the show. This
Anytime.
Has been great. So I just want to once again remind people you can check out Ellie's music at ellieherring.com. That's ELLIEHERRING. Or you can check her out on SoundCloud, anywhere on the internet.
Anywheres.
MySpace,
GeoCities.
Kazaa. Just kidding, don't do that.
Don't.
Yeah. But anyways, thanks, Ellie. It's always great hanging out with
thanks
you.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for everything you do, and thanks for all those sick beats.
Yeah.
We love it.
I'll keep them coming.
For sure. All right, well, here we go.
Thank you.